Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, we're talking about the issues of school reopenings in California. When's it going to happen? It already has happened in some places. For most of the state, though, it hasn't. And there's been a lot of frustration about where do we go from here? The top legislators in California put forth a plan. The governor came out saying he didn't like the plan. Well, we talked to those top legislators on the show this week. The most powerful person in the state assembly, the speaker, Anthony Rendon. The most powerful person in the state Senate, the Senate President Pro Tem Tony Atkins, are our guests this week. We also talked to them about the Golden State stimulus, that nearly $10 billion plan that means $600 checks for millions of Americans, $25,000 grants for small businesses. We have them break it down as well. And then a little later, we talk with Ted Lieu, the Democratic congressman from Torrance, who is one of the House impeachment managers. He takes us inside impeachment. But let's begin with Speaker Rendon and Senator Atkins and the issue of education.
Welcome both of you to The Issue. It's nice to have you on together.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's begin by talking about the issue of education. You guys put a big proposal on the board this week. Let's show this to you. It is a $6.6 billion plan to help reopen schools for in-person learning. It sets a date of April 15th as a date for schools in the red tier to reopen. That red tier is when an area has 7 cases per 100,000. Some critics say this doesn't go far enough. Mr. Speaker, why is this plan the best plan forward?
Well, this is the best plan forward because it helps to get kids in the classroom as soon as possible. It also helps to make sure that that it's done so safely. It also focuses on those kids who are most in need, kids with IEP, homeless, foster youth kids, kids lacking in technology or risk of abuse at home.
You know, originally this was being negotiated with the governor. Now he's threatening to veto this plan. He wants the case rate for reopening an area to be 25 per 100,000 instead of 7 per 100,000. I want to play you what he said about your plan and then let you respond afterwards. Here's the governor.
We are using data. We're using science, WHO, Harvard University, that 25 case per threshold. We're using the lived experience in almost every other state in this country. We would be, if we adopted that proposal, an extreme outlier. And the only cohort that they're requiring go back, it's on April 15th. That's almost near the end of the school year. And those are for special need kids. I want to get our special need kids back in school sooner than 2 months.
Senator, your response to the governor?
Doesn't mean they can't go back sooner. We are just putting a date there by which schools should have a plan to go back. A number of districts have already reopened. We haven't said they couldn't. I think we're just listening to all of the stakeholders, whether it's parents, administrators, teachers, you know, in terms of trying to craft something that does exactly what the speaker says, gets kids back to school as quickly as we can, but also as safely as we can, keeping in mind all of the comments that we have filtered through our hearing process for the last month.
Mr. Speaker, where are the breakdown with the governor? Because we know you were negotiating in good faith with him earlier this week.
Well, we were, and we're continuing to talk to the governor. The pro tem and I spoke to the governor yesterday. Some of the things that the governor said are, within those short sound bites, or maybe a little more explanation is needed. As the pro tem said, April 15th is the maximum deadline. That's the last day for kids to go back, not the first day. And it's also important to keep in mind that, you know, Los Angeles Unified School District is supportive of this proposal. San Diego Unified, Fresno, Oakland, Long Beach, 6 of the largest school districts in the state are in support of this plan. I was talking to my Republican counterpart today on the phone. It's widespread support among Republicans for this proposal as well.
Now, you all do agree with the governor on a massive plan called the Golden State Stimulus. This bill, let's put this information up, gives $600 checks to more than 5 million low-income Californians, including those making under $30,000 a year. It also sets aside $25,000 grants for small businesses impacted by the pandemic. You can go to carelieffgrant.com if you're interested. So, Senator, how do folks actually get that $600? Because a lot of people are like, that sounds good. I could really use that money?
Well, a lot of them will receive it automatically when they do their taxes. We also have the earned income tax credit. We're going to be putting a lot of effort in getting that information out. That's a program. As well, I-10 filers, those who may not have access to the federal stimulus, but who work in California, are going to be able to get the checks as well. So this stimulus that we're able to put forward, we think is very bold. And adds to what the federal government is doing to help Californians a little bit more.
And Mr. Speaker, the small business grants are going to help a lot of people, too. We know so many small businesses are hurting. One question I think a lot of folks have, though, is where does all this money come from? Because when they hear numbers like $9, $10, $16 billion, is it going to mean more taxes for folks?
It's not going to mean more taxes for folks. What's been great about this year thus far is we've had a significant budget surplus this year. We're about $25, $26 billion ahead of where we thought we would be when we did our budget predictions in June. So this sort of one-time funding is going to come in handy, and it's going to be very helpful to Californians.
This is because of a decade of prudent financial, really trying very hard to work our way back from the Great Recession, so that we ended up in the best position when we went into this pandemic. We had a $26 billion reserve. I like to call it a reserve, not a surplus, that we were able to fill in the gaps. And as we saw our revenues continue to be good, we really felt like it needed to be put out into the pockets of struggling, working Californians to help prime our economy.
This governor goes to the people.
Governor Newsom has done an outstanding job for the state of California.
This team here gets this issue.
This is a big deal.
Democrats up and down the state have been appearing with Governor Newsom, singing his praises as the likelihood he will face a recall election this year increases. We're back with the speakers of California's Assembly, Anthony Rendon, and the Senate President Pro Tem, Tony Atkins. So what do you make of the recall threat, Senator? And is the governor's style of governance itself changing because of all of this?
I don't think he's necessarily governing differently. He's the same person he was when he came in. He's just had to become governor in a way that no other governor I can think of has had to do in a century.
Yeah. And Speaker, clearly there's a lot of this is being funded by Republican money, and the National Republican Party is now involved in this as well. But there are folks, even Democrats, that are feel disaffected by this governor's leadership and are angry about the state of the state, especially when it comes to the pandemic. What do you think the message is that they are sending to all of you right now?
I think the message that they're sending is when it comes to things like the EDD crisis, for example, where people depend on government to make sure that they're going to be able to make ends meet and make their rent, for example, pay for their groceries, those types of bread and butter issues. When you have those types of problems, as we've experienced in this state, people are frustrated. I understand that. But I agree with the pro tem. I mean, if you think about all that this governor has experienced, from wildfires to the pandemic and all that's happened since the pandemic, he's done as good a job as anybody could possibly do.
All right. Well, let's have a little bit of fun. What part of what makes this show different is that we like to get to know who our leaders are as people. And Mr. Speaker, I want to start with you. I'd be interested if you could tell us a little bit more about your not such a success story in high school and how you overcame it to be one of the most powerful people in the whole state.
My grade point average at one point in school was 0.83. I remember sitting next to Antonio Villaraigosa at a dinner about 2 years ago, and he told a story about how he had a 1.2 grade point average, and I told him he was a show-off. It was way better than I was in high school. And I was, working in factories and warehouses when I was 19, 20 years old. But honestly, Alex, it was the community college system, low cost, high quality public education system, community college system, the Cal State system, got my PhD in the University of California system. That's what made the difference. And that's it continues to make the difference for millions of Californians.
California does have the best community college system of anywhere in the country. And I don't think we get enough credit for that. Senator, you have really been a trailblazer for gay rights. It must be extraordinary for you to see the changes in your lifetime on that issue in particular.
It's amazing. You know, the speaker and I share quite a lot, actually. I grew up in Southwest Virginia in a house with no running water. So, you know, education, the point made the difference for me. It was education that made the difference for me. Of course, when I came out as a lesbian, California was the place to be. And I am so grateful for everything that California has afforded me. And I could be who I was. I could be here, be a member of the LGBT community proudly. And so I just feel so honored. I've never had to hide that. And, you know, I stand on the shoulders of Christine Kehoe, who was the first open LGBT person elected in San Diego. That gave me every opportunity. And so I'm grateful. I'm grateful.
All right. And we also like to have some fun playing a game called Personal Issues. This is where we put 30 seconds on the clock. We ask you rapid fire questions to get to know you a little bit better. Okay. Are we ready to go? Here we go. Speaker, your favorite show to binge?
God. The Pro Tem's going to answer that.
Okay. Senator.
West Wing.
West Wing. That's the best answer. You just won here. All right. Speaker, favorite thing, favorite meal to eat?
Korean barbecue, for sure.
Senator?
Biscuits and gravy.
And lastly, Senator, your favorite thing about Speaker Rendon?
Oh, my gosh. He loves the Brothers Karamazov. We share a love of the same book.
Okay. Speaker, your favorite thing about the senator?
You heard her story. She's an inspiration from her roots, her upbringing, to what she represents for LGBTQ folks and all Californians. She's a good friend and a tremendous inspiration to all of us.
All right. That's a good place to
back
end.
Back at you, Mr. Speaker. Back at you.
Very nice. I can feel the love here, even though it's virtual. Thank you, guys. The love is real. The distance is virtual. We appreciate it. Thank you both for being on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Senator Rendon. Speaker Rendon and Senator Atkins. Maybe it'll be Senator Rendon one day. Now let's talk to Congressman Ted Lieu, Democrat from Torrance, one of the House impeachment managers who was on the floor making speeches for that big impeachment trial. Of course, the Democrats not getting enough votes to convict. They did get 7 Republicans, but they couldn't get 17 Republicans. So we talk with the congressman about the trial, about COVID relief, and more. Here's Congressman Ted Lieu.
Congressman Lieu joins us now. He was one of 2 impeachment managers from California. He represents Torrance, my hometown of Agoura Hills, and my parents' home city of Venice in Congress. He sits on the Judiciary and Foreign Affairs Committees. Congressman, welcome back to The Issue Is, and I'm happy whenever I can say Agoura Hills on the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Honored to be on your show.
You know, you have been on a lot of stages over the years, but this was different. What was it like physically, mentally, emotionally, speaking in front of the full Senate, but then also to millions of Americans watching on TV and to the history books all at the same time? What was that like? How do you process that?
That's a great question. So as a former prosecutor, I've done a number of trials. This was different because you're in the Senate chamber. They're wearing masks. They can't talk. And they're staring at you. And there's 100 senators. Hmm. So it was quite an unnerving experience. And also knowing that it was being broadcast around America. But I did want to make sure that I give a shout out to all the other House impeachment managers. This really was a team effort, and the staff, they really put together a great case for us to present.
You know, you all ended up deciding not to call any witnesses. Take us behind the scenes of that decision, and do you now regret it? And anything what you wish that you did differently?
I would have loved to have been able to call witnesses, and here is the problem. For any non-friendly witness, such as Kevin McCarthy or Vice President Pence or so on, they would have objected to the subpoena, and then we would have to litigate in court for literally months or years. We're still litigating the McGahn witness subpoena from the first impeachment. And that's why, just from a timing perspective, it would have been impossible for us really to call witnesses unless they would agree to come, and they weren't agreeing to come.
Based off of what Mitch McConnell said afterwards, where he essentially laid out your case and then said, yeah, but I still voted the other way, do you think that witnesses would have made a difference? Would it have changed any minds?
The only witness that would have made a difference is if we had resurrected one of the founding fathers and had Benjamin Franklin tell the Senate Republicans that, no, there's no January exception in the Constitution. Because when you read what the Senate Republicans were saying after the trial was over, it was very clear that very few of them were defending the president's conduct. They were basing it on this jurisdiction argument, which I believe, in my view, is a willful misreading of the Constitution, because I do believe the Senate does have jurisdiction over the former president. And the witnesses simply would not have changed their minds.
Thomas Jefferson was actually on the witness list, but there was a bit of a fight with the lawyers, so I guess that didn't happen. One of the questions now is, where does President Trump, do you think, go from here? Republican Senator Mitch McConnell suggested the possibility of criminal charges. You see, in the polls, he's the front runner to be the Republican nominee in 2024. What do you think's next for him?
So let's think about how remarkable a statement it is that the Senate minority leader is essentially saying that he thinks a criminal justice system can hold Donald Trump accountable. He's basically one step away from saying lock him up. And that just shows you that you've got a split now within the Republican Party. You have people who follow the facts, and then you have those who don't. And we know that most of America is not where the Republican base is. You had a majority of the House, a majority of the Senate, and a majority of American people conclude that Donald Trump incited an insurrection. And by the way, a vote of 57 to 43 is not close in most other contexts. That's generally a blowout.
So, Congressman, you and I have known each other for years, but most people in this country got to know you because of your tweets in response to President Trump's tweets. Is there part of you, any part of you deep down inside, that misses him on Twitter, that misses the response, that misses the opportunity to respond to what he's saying?
No, not at all. My blood pressure is lower. I'm much calmer now. I don't have to wake up every morning thinking about what weird, bizarre thing he happened to decide to write on Twitter. And what we see now is President Biden working very hard to deliver pandemic relief to the American people, and we're going to pass the American Rescue Plan soon in Congress.
Well, let's talk more about that, because a lot of your constituents are more concerned about coronavirus than they are, frankly, about impeachment. What date specifically can they be looking towards to get that next check, that $1,400 check?
So the various committees in the House of Representatives have been working on the American Rescue Plan. I sit on one of the committees that wrote a section of it. I've been brief on all the other sections. It is a really good bill that's going to provide $1,400 of stimulus checks, billions of dollars for vaccine distribution, as well as money to school districts and cities and states. The House will vote this out essentially next week, and then we'll send it to the Senate, and hopefully they can work quickly on it, and then we should get it to the president's desk sometime in March, well before the expiration of unemployment benefits.
A big picture question to end on. 1 year ago this week, there were 15 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the U.S. President Trump had just been acquitted in his first impeachment trial. A lot has changed over the course of the year. Where do you see the U.S. 1 year from now, in February of 2022?
Hopefully, you'll be interviewing me in your studio live in person. I do think a year from now, we'll be back largely to normal, where people will be doing in-person activities. And most people who want to have a vaccine, I hope everyone wants a vaccine, will have been vaccinated well before that time period.
Well, I certainly miss seeing you in person and look forward to that day. We appreciate your perspective. Thanks so much for coming on, Congressman.
Thank you, Alex.
Our thanks to Congressman Liu, our thanks to the leaders of California's legislature, and our thanks to you for listening. We encourage you to check us out in social media. I'm at Alex Michelson. That's Alex with an E. The Issue Is now on Tubi, where it is streaming. You can find out more about our show at theissueisshow.com. We hope you'll leave us a review here in podcast form and let people know about us. I'm Alex Michelson. See you next week.